and Griska. Hi, Kevin.
Hi, Serge.
So what have you been working on these days? What excites you these days?
Well, I've been working on a manuscript, a book project, with a colleague of mine, a theologian. And it's what it focuses on is the use of our felt sense or our felt understanding of any given moment in social projects. In other words, social change projects.
Hmm.
The title of the book is tentatively called Peace Building from the Inside Out. And the basic tenet is that we can flip over upside down, if you will, how we make social change or how we think or conceive about change in social patterns, like the peace building process being this particular focus. We can flip it upside down, starting from the inside first, and letting the ideas and the creativity sort of propagate and generate and flow out from there.
So you're talking about peace from the inside out, and it's a process that involves the felt sense.
Yes.
So and you talk about flipping things from the inside. So what happens in this process? What would be, how could I have a sense of what it's about?
Well, by flipping it upside down, I'm referring to kind of a contrast to the usual way we might think of a complex problem. Maybe it's in our own life or could be on a larger scale like I'm pointing to. But if you look at things, and I think focusers are very much attuned to this, is that what makes things shift in us is when we attend to the inside, what we call in this profession the felt sense. When we attend, we know it doesn't just stay there. It actually progresses or it
okay.
moves, right?
So in other words, the normal, standard, stereotypical way of dealing with conflict is looking at the externals.
That's right.
And
you
here...
Exactly. You look at variables, you look at contributing factors, cofactors, but those are all really good terms, by the way, but they're almost exclusively used to identify external from the human to the external, the social, political, the economic, the gender, the identity, whatever variable you can imagine, and people have imagined lots of them. It's all external to the human experience.
Right. So we're not taking a position on whether or not any of these factors is real, important, and so on, but just in this process, instead of focusing on the externals, it's focusing on the internal experience.
Right. Exactly. And that's a very good point. I'm not putting down or negating any of those other ways of looking at things, because as ways of looking at things, that gives a clue of what they do. They are distancing. They're an objectivity, and that is really required. And it's an important and powerful tool that human beings have developed, this thing called objectivity. But what I'm talking about is not even subjectivity. It's about really getting into the felt quality, which, as I understand it from reading the process model, is already an ongoing process.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not an either-or. It's not a dichotomous place.
Yes.
Yeah, does that make sense?
Yes, yes. So just, shifting the attention from the externals to the process, the internal reality, the experience, the felt sense.
Yeah. What I've come across is that if someone starts that way, it is remarkably more creative, and it creates more internal sense of ease. And I even dare say happiness inside a person's experience, but also shared with others who feel the same way. So it's like there's a tangible outcome that might be in terms of new creative actions.
Mm-hmm.
But there's also this sort of quality shift, and that's what I'm really, really excited about, is the quality that people feel is liberating, or like things like words like liberation, lightness,
mm-hmm.
ease, spaciousness. And imagine how a conflicting situation is not that.
Yes, right? Yes.
And so just starting from that other place, wow.
So very much the conflicting situation is that sense of being put on the spot, being in a corner, a sense of tightness, and what you're talking about is the felt sense of expansion and space.
Yes, exactly. And in that environment, and this is kind of the way I talk about it in the manuscript, is that we have the ability to create environments that are more generative than the typical ones that we're used to. And by generative, I mean creative.
So what do you mean by creating environment? Is this is a shifting the focus, or what do you mean by that?
Well, by environment, I think I guess I would specifically say an environment is when an environment occurs when we attend to a quality of a situation as it moves out into the more or less external world. So that's a very broad statement, but it's like, so I will call an environment my idea of myself.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of a static concept like self, I'm saying this is now a self-environment. It's much more open when I say it like that to me, to my internal experience.
Okay, so in other words, we're not taking it as something that's a fixed reality, something that's a thing, but something that can shift. Your idea of yourself is something that can interact and evolve, and therefore it's an environment.
Yes. It's an already ongoing thing, i.e. a process.
A process.
So, again, I think for us in our in the focusing world, that is very key. It's a key element to what underlies why focusing even works, or why the felt sense is so powerful, even if you don't do focusing. Because you can have the felt sense without focusing on it, of course.
Right? Yeah.
So when I'm talking about this in this manuscript, I'm not really at all talking about focusing per se, not even in the least.
Mm-hmm.
What I'm talking about is something that is in fact broader than the focusing steps, and that's the felt quality or the felt understanding. Because people can feel, I can feel, you can feel, people listening to this can feel already when they just touch inside how different that is and how more spacious.
So maybe is there a way that we can invite people to get an experience of this as we talk, of inviting people to touch inside, or what would you suggest?
Sure. Would you like me to kind of do a little bit of that?
Yeah.
Lead that a little bit?
Yeah.
Okay. Sure. So I would say first, for anyone who's willing and interested, what we would do is just maybe spend the next few minutes just sensing inside ourselves for an area of concern first, something that is not necessarily hugely troubling, but something that has concern. And we will work just a tiny little bit in silence with a few little directions on my part.
Okay.
Okay.
So looking for an area of concern.
Mm-hmm. All right. So I'd ask everybody to just take a moment now and let your attention sort of drop inside yourself. Sometimes listening to podcasts can take us up into our head, and sometimes not. Maybe we have a lot of things on our plate today. Whatever it is,
mm-hmm.
Let's just take a moment and let our attention drop away from all those things to the inside.
Yeah.
And so maybe immediately there, we have a sense of how different that is. Just even that little tiny step of attending. And it's okay to not put words to it yet. It's just fine.
Mm-hmm.
Just the nice quality of how that is.
Yeah.
So it's important, I think, to really mark this sense that we have when we just first look inside. And if there is then a word, an image, a sound, a sense that can accompany it comfortably, we can let that come now.
Mm-hmm.
we don't really want to interact with that. We just want it to just be there. Sensing no need to change it. It's just there, and it's okay.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what I would call our inner environment.
Mm.
That's the environment that I spoke of earlier.
Yeah. So we've gone into a different dimension. That's definitely something where from issues, words, thoughts, you know, they may still be present, but definitely there's a sense of being more grounded and a sense of connection to something internal that's happening.
Yes, right. Right. So this environment is there for us, even in the slightest turning inward.
Mm-hmm.
I think that, again, is another real important aspect of our work. The shift, or the dramatic shifts, we don't necessarily have to go for those. But what we really need first is this recognition that my inner world, my environment inside me, feels like such and such.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where I would begin when I would be talking about or working with somebody, even in an interview situation, to have them maybe talk about a specific experience.
Right.
So we start with connecting to this inner environment. And for me, I don't use a whole lot of the traditional focusing words that I might use if I was teaching someone focusing. I do that on purpose because I think this inner environment is easily recognizable without a whole lot of specific jargon.
Right. Right. I mean, basically, since we're talking about an experience that's part of the human experience, it's not something that's going to be depending on the words that you use, but the connection you have with the person you're interacting with.
Right. So when I can have this environment, and of course I would like to develop some value about it. I would like to honor it. I would like to be peaceable with it. And then on the opposite side, I would not necessarily like to be confrontative with it. I would like to be accepting. So along with my inner environment comes some valuing of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's also like a secondary process that comes along with this inner attention.
So inner attention and valuing.
Yeah.
Okay.
They come hand in hand sometimes naturally, but sometimes not. Sometimes we really have to put that out there.
Mm-hmm.
That we need to develop a capacity, it's like working a muscle to be accepting.
Yeah.
And again, the focus of my manuscript is on basic conflictual, really deeply conflictual situations around the world. So you can imagine that that is not the first experience
right.
that a lot of people would say when they come inside about X, Y, and Z. That's terribly disturbing.
So let's backtrack a little bit just to, you know, just as we went into this process about a conflict, and people may have chosen an external conflict like a war, like a political point of view, like an issue, but does this also something that works for internal conflict, or are we doing this process and describing it mostly for dealing with things that happen in conflicts in the outside world?
Of course it has to do with both, and I believe they can occur simultaneously. So one can have, or one will always have, an internal experience even of a very external conflict. So let's say you're not directly involved with the Taliban,
mm-hmm.
right? But you read about it. So you
yeah.
have an experience of it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So we don't need to be in that other place in the world to have an experience of it.
Okay.
So I can now, at least at a very interpersonal level, or intrapersonal level, a level inside me, I can now be with my environment, my inner environment, about that thing. And I can bring to it the values, the broad values of acceptance, understanding, companionship, for instance. When I bring those together, my inner attending and my valuing of what is there for me about all of that, I have already changed my relation to that thing, and that thing's relation to me has also changed.
So I want to just go very slowly here. When you're talking about the inner attention and the valuing, what's happening is, let's say we started with an external thing like the Taliban. We found the inner experience, and what we bring this inner attention to and valuing is to the inner experience. At this point, we're not talking about valuing or appreciating or tolerating the issue itself, the Taliban. Am I right?
That's correct. That is correct. We are not condoning things which would be probably against most people's core values in terms of, let's say, human respect for human life or fair sense of fairness and not doing violence to others, those sorts of shared values across a lot of peoples of the planet. We're not actually supporting the action of the Taliban, but what we are supporting is our feel for that, and that is a very internal thing.
Yes. So definitely we have shifted the focus of attention from the issue to the internal environment.
Yes. And that, again, creates reflexively or simultaneously a change in our relationship to it and its relationship to us.
Mm-hmm.
Again, that's all at an internal, that's at an internal level. The Taliban is still going to be doing what it does out there, regardless, in a way, of what I feel about it.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to be clear that we're still on this realm of the inner attending.
Yes.
So if someone had the time or the interest in, let's say, working on this issue, and this is very, very keen to a lot of people, is that you might now extend that environment that you have within you to a conversation with someone else. They don't need to do this process like you just did, but you already bring that new environment that perhaps is a little bit more spacious, a little bit more, well, not necessarily agreeing, nothing like that, but perhaps it's just a little bit more welcoming of the diversity of the conflict and of all that comes with it.
Mm-hmm.
When you begin to talk to another human being from that place, the conversation can start off on a very different foot.
Right. So, you know, almost visually, you know, my sense of what you're talking about is if, you know, the attention were a screen, in our normal way of talking about conflict, the issue, the conflict, the external, the biases, you know, take the whole screen. And here, at least part of the screen is taken by the inner experience. So there is definitely a broadening of what we have in mind. Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. A broadening of what we have in mind. Now, for me as a just a regular human being talking to anybody about, let's say, again, using the example of the Taliban, could be anything, but let's use that, is that I may now engage in a conversation that is, I believe, going to be richer. Richer for my spending a moment, spending time to get the sense of what my inner environment is like regarding this idea or this topic.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I can say that not just because I think it's true, but because some of the research that I've done actually does point that. And one of the key examples, I have two key examples. One is the conference, the focusing conference that was held a few years ago in Israel, and the post-conference event that went on with Israelis and Palestinians, some Israeli citizens who were Palestinians, some non, and some conference attendees. There's one of those where I saw this happen. And the other has been some of my work in Latin America with small-based Christian communities.
Mm-hmm.
Right? when you come from the place, these people don't necessarily need to know focusing at all.
Yeah.
But they do know their insides, and they know what it feels like to be inside themselves. I've seen the shift that happens in conversations at a very small level, but also within groups, when people can touch into first that sense of how it is for them about all of that.
Yes. So how do you see the shift? It's in behaviors, in body language, in the kind of conversation?
Let me use the example of the small-based Christian communities, which are sort of based in liberation theology in Latin America, which is very very popular, if you will. That's not a terribly good word to say it that way, but it is. It's used quite a bit. And so I attended a few of these small-based groups, which in the case of my attending them, they were held in really incredibly poor areas in the city of Cuernavaca, Mexico, not too far from Mexico City. And the group structure itself has several components to it, which I won't go into, but they spend a moment at the beginning in silence, unstructured silence, where they are simply asked to look inside themselves and see how they're doing. All right. Sounds very focusing, doesn't it?
Yep.
But they don't know focusing from schmocusing. They know nothing about it. They don't need to. But they know that. They've already hit on that. That real political change happens from the inside. They've got that. But what they do is they've developed a structure now for moving that internal sense to an external action. And so by the end of the meeting, what I witnessed was is that there was a homeless man, we would say, in the United States, he'd be homeless. There's some different category in Mexico, but let's say he has no money whatsoever.
Yeah.
So he felt compelled, because he could sense the need within himself for some change in his local little environment that he lived, his physical environment, he volunteered to distribute flyers that had on them an advertisement for a talk that a person was going to give about forming political groups within the barrios, let's say. So he couldn't give money. He was not educated enough to be able to even write the poster himself. But where he was motivated was the sense and of the need and the desire to do something about it. And that came from his inside. So at the end of the meeting, he volunteered to distribute all these posters, which would take him away from his only source of income, which would be to basically go to the tourist areas of the big cities and try to sell things like gum and little trinkets and things like that.
Right.
So he actually volunteered to cut off, in a sense, his income for a day.
Right.
Now, you wouldn't necessarily say that that is such a big thing, but it really was, from a personal level, was quite a big thing for him to do that.
No, I mean, it definitely illustrates the depth of commitment. So what you're talking about is a sense of him having found inside something that resonated with the cause, and that motivation to do something about it.
That's correct. Yep. Now, that, again, my example seems almost maybe unremarkable, but it's these kinds of things which are evidence of how, when we touch into our inner environment, that change can come. Now, I also believe that it doesn't always work that way. All right? That, you know, we can touch into our inner environment, have great ideas, and we run up against brick walls. So one of the things I, again, talk about in this book is the external environment's capacity to accept new information. And it's at least being neutral to you. So that crosses the board on all sorts of external structures that we live with. Could be our office situation if we work in an office. It could be our therapy practice environment if we work with others and groups. It doesn't matter what the external situation is that if that is at least neutral to you, your feel for what the next step is, I believe, more likely to occur.
Right.
And certainly if it were pushed back or hostile.
Yeah. Right? Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, if you want to demonstrate in a dictatorship in Iran, it's going to be a little bit more difficult, or Tiananmen.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Right. Right. It's a perfect example. So what I talk about then towards the end of the book is, well, what kinds of environments, structures, because environments are kind of structure that human beings create, is the best kind, or if you say the most open kind to information that comes from the inside? That's a general question that I ask towards the end of the book. And I give a little bit of an example or two here, but it really is up for the person to create those structures or environments that are more or less open.
Mm-hmm.
And anyway, that would be a very firm foundation to begin a lot of social change.
That sounds wonderful. That's a nice way to change also the focus of, you know, certainly without talking about social change for a moment, but simply in the context of a therapy practice, it would be about focusing on the conditions that make change possible, instead of, say, harping on what a person needs to do.
Yes.
And that feels very consistent with the approach of focusing in general, but it seems to just push it a step beyond, you know, just thinking of it as an environment.
Right. One reflection I can add to that as a white male from the United States is that the United States has earned itself legitimately a fairly, I don't know, I would say kind of a bad reputation for interfering without actually wanting to know the full situation before we interfere. And that can be, you know, like throwing money at a problem because we're one of the wealthiest countries in the world without actually understanding what the problem is from someone else's point of view. Other people talk about that as a kind of leftover from our Madisonian instincts to conquer, or colonization tendencies, you know.
Imperial,
Yeah, exactly. Right. And other countries have done the same thing as us. But so one of the things that I think will occur is that when we do come from the inside and we are an outsider, like me in Latin America, I'm not of Spanish or Mexican descent. Right, I'm Northern European. Or if I go to Israel or Palestine, I am not Jewish, nor am I Muslim. All right, so I'm not actually homemade in any of those external kinds of environments. But I could still be there in them, at least in a neutral capacity, in creating and sustaining my own inner environment. But I think be more than that. I think I can be a spacious environment which will precipitate some positive change in those other local places.
So that's a very powerful concept that, you know, in a way what we have to bring in these situations is that capacity to model and to leak spaciousness in a way. I'm not sure the word leak is very good because I mean it in a positive way, but yeah.
Well, I actually like that. I chuckle because that's a nice way of saying it. Yeah.
Good.
Yeah, I'm going to actually steal that from you.
Good.
I'll give you proper credit, but I like it. Yeah, leaking spaciousness. That's a great way of saying it. So,
radiating.
Yeah, maybe it almost goes a little bit too towards the angelic. Yeah, leaking spaciousness that I think people will understand.
Mm-hmm.
So even out of our little conversation here, something has emerged, a different way of looking. That's generative.
Yeah. So from that process, from maybe that sense of not just dealing with the issues at hand from the issues themselves, but incorporating the inner process at the same time.
Exactly. Yeah. And that has been, I think, a large part of what I've been up to throughout my whole career, if you will, since I graduated from graduate school.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't say I've had a very coherent sense of that at all. I'm not saying that. I'm not sure I knew what I was doing, frankly.
Well, but the whole idea of a process is you don't necessarily know where it goes, but it's unfolding.
Yeah. So now a few things have come a little clearer to me. Mm-hmm. And one is that as I develop, or as we can develop our inner environment in these, or towards, leaning towards these core values of acceptance and spaciousness, companionship, regard, understanding, all those things, as we can develop that, and I'm not deluded to say that that's easy in some cases, mm-hmm. but as we can develop that, and maybe there are wonderful teachers out there who do really fine work in that regard. Well, we need more.
Yeah.
You know, we need more who are willing to do that work in conflict, because the world appears some days teetering on the edge of a whole lot more conflict.
Mm-hmm.
Some days not so much. So I think we need more.
Yeah. So that sounds like a great place to end, but I want to check if you have something you might want to add to this or...
Well, let's see. I might kind of give another little word for a couple of words for what we've been talking about,
mm-hmm.
and that is the way I talk about this when we move from our inner environment to working with others. This is I would call this, and I would agree with Jenlin on this, what he calls interhuman attention.
Hmm.
And that's a concept, but it's also a living process, and it is one of the I think most powerful things that we as a focusing community can give the world is our skill at interhuman attention, and we are skillful at it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think we exactly know we are, and a lot of us don't really want to or have any interest in making it more than just personally meaningful, but our skill set is powerful, and I believe it is needed. So when we advance interhuman attending, because it's based in intrahuman attending, my own inner environment, change happens, I think, exponentially when the external environments are there to meet it.
You know, just as I'm hearing you, something changes just from calling it focusing or to calling it interhuman attention. There's that concept that we have moved this paying attention to the inner world from something that can be very self-oriented, very personal, to something that has a very strong engagement with others.
Yes, absolutely.
And at the same time retains the satisfying quality that comes from being in this inner world.
Mm-hmm.
So there's something very exciting about what you're saying there.
Thank you. Yeah, I feel that too. But earlier I said, you know, well, we create more inner happiness when we do that for ourselves. I think mm-hmm. that goes without saying. We've all probably experienced that at least even a little bit. But that happiness is available in our other interhuman relationships.
Mm-hmm.
And that is, I think, the seed of real positive social change.
Yeah. Yeah. So that there is that sense of, in a way, the interdependence, the connection, you know, is built in that concept.
Yes, it is. It is. That's why I think I like that sense that it's a process understanding,
mm-hmm.
not a linear understanding or a dichotomous understanding. It's really about it. Really, the word process captures all the nuance that we could possibly delineate.
Yeah. Yeah. Great.
Okay.
Well, thanks, Kevin.
Thanks, Serge.
This is part of the Focusing Conversations series of the Focusing Institute, hosted by Serge Prangle. All contents are protected by copyright. You can find other such conversations on our website at focusing.org/conversations.